Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, in the second of our two special seasonal episodes, we look at four key trends that will shape 2018. Technological disruption, sustainability, the ending of a decade of easing, and geopolitical flux. With the help of the UBS Year Ahead 2018 report, its author, and our usual expert panel, we set the agenda for the year ahead. We start with Kiran Ganesh, Executive Director at UBS Wealth Management and main author of the 2018 Year Ahead report. Kiran, how did you and your colleagues formulate the structure and themes here?
We were sitting down thinking about what we could cover that would be of particular interest as we look ahead to 2018. And we were actually scratching our heads a bit because a lot of the key trends are actually quite similar. We'd expect to see global equities continuing to rise. We expect to see quite similar levels of profit growth. And we expect to see quite similar levels of economic growth. But we were thinking that that clearly is overlooking something. And then we came up with these four key issues that we think will be pervading markets through the year, and then we think that investors will need to react to. And they are monetary tightening, the act of increasing interest rates or withdrawing some of this extraordinary monetary policy we've seen in recent years, and political flux, and the fact that we'll see elections in Italy, Brazil, Mexico, the US with the midterms continuing to dominate the headlines. And the third is technological disruption, which I'm sure many of us observe every day, whether that's autonomous driving or artificial intelligence. And the final one is sustainability challenges, because all of this is taking place against a backdrop of a world which is more polluted than ever, is using more natural resources than ever before, high rates of carbon emissions, climate change, very high levels of migration and global inequality. So we consider that these other issues may be sort of bubbling away under the surface and lead to moves in markets over and above our sort of fairly similar overall outlook.
Now, many of these areas are disruptive, volatile. One could be forgiven for thinking, Kiran, only about the challenges they pose. But tell us a bit more about how clients and investors more generally might best position in 2018 to take advantage in these spaces.
Something that pervades all of the themes is that there are opportunities and risks with each. So, I can start with politics, which many people nowadays will perceive as being a major risk factor. We tend to look at it that the risks can be quite easily diversified. If investors do invest across a range of global markets, they don't have to be exposed to any one individual political risk. And the opportunities come from some of the potential regulatory changes or changes in investment that politicians may put through, and we think could boost US earnings per share growth up to 15%, which would be a very high level. And in places like China, they're looking at spending more than $100 billion over the next few years on their One Belt, One Road infrastructure project. So big potential opportunities for investors there. If we look at something like technological disruption, then clearly it is disruptive, of course, but then there are also big opportunities to invest in the winners, in things like digital data and automation and robotics. And then when it comes to higher interest rates, again, could be seen as a potential risk, but also a big opportunity to be investing in things like US financials, which we think could see significantly higher profit margins as a result of higher rates.
Kiran Ganesh. Well, let's delve in a little more detail into one of the key themes Kiran was talking about there, monetary tightening. Andreas Kuster is head of global asset allocation at UBS CIO Wealth Management. There's an interesting narrative, isn't there, about monetary policy as we look into 2018, the end of quantitative easing, the era, if you like, of quantitative tightening. You and your colleagues obviously always looking to the future. What do you make of the dynamics here? Presumably nothing unduly to worry about.
So as you said, we're looking at central banks as play in the market every time. I think the difference this time is that central banks, since 2009, have maybe expanded their roles, not voluntarily but forcefully. And now we had basically 10 years, so basically end of November 2008, it started with quantitative easing. Now we're coming basically close to the 10th anniversary and saying, so next year, and saying, are we unwinding it? So for 10 years, we're always observing it as they're helping us to accelerate the economy, and now they're feeling confident that they are no longer needed. And so they basically explained to us over the last couple of months how they're planning to unwind their stimulus, again, in very slow steps. But I think that's why it's more important this time, because if somebody working with you all the time and providing you the tailwinds, that's a nice thing. And now basically we have to get used to a potential unwind. And that's something which the market hasn't been used to for some time, and therefore we expect a little bit more uncertainty. But so far, I think they're very good on guiding us through that path on the way out. So that's why this time, 2018, is the 10th anniversary of easing, but also maybe the juncture of more tightening coming.
Well, Andreas, let me ask you a bit about that then, because obviously some observers say, okay, well, as stimulus declines, then the markets, we could see more volatility. And you've already mentioned that idea of investor confidence in this sort of interventionist position that many central banks have had. Will investors be prompted to doubt that ongoing willingness? Or do you think there is a broader confidence around and confidence too that there'll be new private buyers for new net debt issuance and so on?
The problem, I think, is not the willingness, but more the question of ability to keep it, I would call it maybe accident-free. So central banks have basically clearly indicated they are as long there as needed, and that has not changed. And what we see at the moment is normalization process. It's a sign of confidence that they feel the economy is strong enough that these emergency measures are no longer needed. From that perspective, I think it's a good sign. It's a sign of strength. But at the same time, when we had Mr. Bernanke in 2008 talking about quantitative easing, and he was, in our view, all the most suited person because at least he studied the effect of it, I think we haven't had a lot of central bankers who had experience of the unwind. Maybe investors haven't had a lot of experience on the unwind. And we always try to compare it a little bit with what you see in normal people's behavior. And we wrote a paper a couple of years ago. We called it Sugar High, which was like giving kids candy when they're grumpy in the back seat of your car and you calm them down with some candies. And kids get used to it over years. And we always avoid for the time when we take the candy away from them. And that's a little bit the worry, because that we don't want any tantrums.
Andreas Koester, let's get a final note from you on the questions to ponder regarding monetary tightening.
I think the big jury is out. How big was the effect of QE on the way in? And therefore, how much is the effect on the way out? Because we had the effect in over 7 years. So if you have every year a little bit of nice tailwind, it's nice. If you then unwind all this stimulus over 7 or 8 years again, it should be manageable. What is very interesting is that the unwind shouldn't go too quick.
Andreas Koester. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll continue our look ahead into 2018. We'll ponder the role that geopolitical upheaval, technological disruption, and sustainability challenges might play in the year ahead. Let's turn next on this special 2018 look-ahead edition of the programme to politics. Paul Donovan is Global Chief Economist at UBS Wealth Management. Now, Paul, politics or potential political upheaval is, of course, discussed in the Year Ahead piece as something to watch. But there's an interesting dynamic here, isn't there? And maybe you can talk to us about this, which is that whilst that's the case, and of course risks will be thrown up by political volatility, the broad expectation is that the market impact will be relatively limited. Maybe you can explain to us why that's the case.
One of the things about politics is that it doesn't really have much of an impact on the economy in the short term. And of course, financial markets are trying to reflect what is going on in the economy over the coming months. And the reason that politics has fairly limited impact is that, for the most part, people in the economy care about two questions. Do I have a job? Can I afford to buy what I want to buy? And on a 12-month, maybe an 18-month view, politicians have remarkably little impact on the answer to those two questions. Now, politics matters a great deal if we're talking about a 5-year view, trend growth rates, competitiveness, long-term trade, all that sort of thing. But in the short term, politicians really aren't that important. And so a lot of the political noise doesn't really have that much of an economic and thus market impact.
So, Paul, I suppose then it follows from that we could say that the impact of politics is greater, you know, on a local level, therefore, than on a global level. But nevertheless, I suppose there is the opposite of that, which can be true. And there are historical examples, of course, where reverberations are more profound. Are there particular flashpoints that potentially could have that wider impact, nevertheless?
I think there are a number of issues where politics could have a wider impact. I mean, clearly, we have the ongoing situation with Korea, and we have an escalation of tensions within the Middle East region, specifically around Iran and perhaps to some extent Saudi Arabia. And those areas, I think, potentially, relatively low probability, might spill over and have a broader impact. One thing, though, is that financial markets tend not to price in very extreme political risk. So risk of war or conflict, for example, is rarely priced into financial markets before it actually happens. So I think that we have to be aware that whilst these are potentially very significant risks, it's not something that markets necessarily will reflect as a possibility. They would only reflect as a reality. We've then got perhaps more readily accepted risks in markets, and that's issues around trade tensions, for example, with the United States and Europe, with the United States and China, with the United States and Japan potentially at some point, and then the ongoing negotiations between the UK and the European Union. Again, more of a trade focus and something which markets may perhaps pay a bit more attention to.
In a time of rapid technological development, it's fitting that the potentially disruptive impact of this advance is our next theme to watch in 2018. Alex Steeler is equity analyst in the CIO Wealth Management. Alex, why is technological disruption a core theme for the year ahead?
I'm covering the industrial sector here within the Chief Investment Office. Therefore, let's maybe take a look at the automation sector, for instance. In the past, automation stocks followed clearly the investment cycles of its customers, but we believe that the sector is entering a phase of long-term structural growth. So the fourth industrial revolution will transform the future of manufacturing. It is powered by, on the one side, a smart automation combining the innovation power of industrial, but also IT processes to drive the gains in global manufacturing activity.
So, Alex, how to best navigate the space? How to judge, for example, where hype ends and substance starts?
In research, we are often faced with this question. Sometimes it's not immediately easy to evaluate whether it's already the right point to invest. The Internet of Things is a perfect example, in my view. We initially covered the topic in January 2014 for the first time when the industry was still very young. Since then, it has matured with much better medium to long-term growth visibility. So the initial hype around the industry has also settled, which means growth expectations are now more realistic. And finally, this summer, we launched our first investment theme about this topic. So there you can see it took nearly 3 years until we really recommended it as an investment to our clients.
And Alex, just finally, does looking at this space remind you and your colleagues, and therefore clients and investors alike, of the importance of a diversified portfolio?
Yes, definitely. That's one of our investment recommendations to avoid single stock and also sector concentration, and especially in hot topics which are not very well developed. It's really risky to focus only on one or two stocks because you never know whether these are the winners. And therefore, we highly recommend a diversified investment approach.
Finally on the programme, let's look at the challenges presented by sustainability issues. Simon Smiles is UBS Chief Investment Officer for Ultra High Net Worth. Simon, perhaps you can give us an overview here. Why is this sort of sustainability topic still front and centre, both in the year ahead report? And as I said, you know, it's a theme you and I often talk about. Why does it stay so prominent?
I think actually it's becoming more prominent. There are clearly great needs across society. It's been well framed by the United Nations 17 Sustainable Development Goals and the sub-goals within each of those. There is a huge funding gap to reach these sustainable development targets, and investment plays a part and a role there. So I think there's a greater awareness from our client base, there's a greater willingness from our client base, and there's a greater appetite to invest sustainably.
Simon, next, give us a sense how far innovations and new products have entered the space.
Traditionally, sustainable investing involved exclusion, getting rid of sectors or companies that did bad things, That then evolved to integration, taking into account environmental, social and governance issues when assessing whether to purchase an instrument. However, we're at a cusp where the scale and type and innovation of the investment products available to invest sustainably is growing exponentially. And so where we've been putting a lot of focus is how do we create true sustainable investing cross-asset portfolios? So top-down, 100% allocating just to sustainable and impact investing strategies, and bottom-up filling that asset allocation with 100% sustainable and impact investing vehicles. And that's where we've put a lot of focus. It's something that we're excited about being able to launch next year, and we talk about in our year ahead publication. So to put some context around that, you know, rather than in a traditional portfolio allocating to high-grade bonds, instead allocating to the debt of multilateral development banks, so the World Banks of the world, for example. Because it's off the radar for many institutional fund managers, it's beyond their benchmark, it actually represents a fantastic opportunity from a private investor perspective, not only to help fund development in the world by providing money to institutions such as the World Bank, but it also gives particularly attractive risk-return characteristics. In fact, World Bank debt offers you a yield pickup over US treasuries, despite being AAA rated, when the US government, even the US government, is only AA rated.
Simon, we've talked before a little bit about this idea of the way that investors and clients look at their portfolio. And you've already talked about this idea that you can now have a fully diversified portfolio of sustainable investments. And maybe that wasn't something that people even really thought was possible in the not too distant past. Why exactly has that happened? And maybe you can tell us how it can now deliver those risk-adjusted returns similarly to a well-diversified traditional portfolio.
Over the last 20 years, the vast majority of academic research and studies in the space shows that sustainable investing does not hamper or harm financial returns, and in fact, growing evidence that it can enhance the risk-adjusted return. You look at the long-term performance of more sustainable companies. Again, over an extended period of time, there is mounting evidence that sustainable investing can increase financial returns, again, rather than hampering them, which has been a common misperception in the past. But as we looked at this space, again, the focus was on how do we replicate what traditionally has been an equity focus with respect to sustainable investing into a true cross-asset context and do it in a way that makes compelling financial returns as well as having the positive, sustainable, and in certain cases, impact attributes. I mentioned replacing high-grade exposure with World Bank debt. Again, getting better risk-adjusted returns through the cycle and higher yields than US Treasuries. We also replaced investment-grade credit with green bonds, so often issued by the same investment-grade companies, but with the proceeds of that issuance going directly into environmentally friendly projects.
And that's Simon Smiles, bringing us to the end of this 169th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.